Welcome to Radio at Firehouse.com. Real issues, real answers, real firefighters. Firehouse.com brings you the leaders of the nation's fire, rescue, and EMS services, the top columnists and educators, and today's most important issues, headlines, and comments. Listen right on your desktop or download and listen on the go to Firehouse.com.
Hi, it's Kurt Barone, fire law columnist for Firehouse Magazine. I look forward to seeing you at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore, where I'll be presenting a program that I call Police Fire Wars. It's an in-depth look at a serious problem that just doesn't seem to want to go away, police officers arresting firefighters at incident scenes. If you join us, you walk away with a better understanding of the cases and what we'll need to do to prevent these kinds of ugly misunderstandings from happening. Learn more about Firehouse Expo at firehouseexpo.com, and I'll see you in July.
Thank you for joining us on Firehouse.com podcast. I'm Billy Hayes, and I'm here with several prestige guests that we have a part of the Chief Alan Brunicini Fire Rescue Leadership Retreat that's run through Columbia Southern University. Our first guest really needs no introduction other than you can't really see him over the radio and through the computer, but it's Chief Alan Brunicini, retired fire chief from Phoenix, Arizona. Also joining us is former fire chief from Washington, D.C. Fire and EMS Department, Chief Dennis L. Rubin. And also with us is Chief Bruce Varner, who most recently retired from Santa Rosa, California Fire Department. He's also been with Carrollton and Phoenix, Arizona. Gentlemen, thanks for joining us with us today, and we have a great topic of leadership that we're going to be discussing in our podcast today. So, Chief Brunicini, if you could, with our guests who are listening in to this podcast, if you could, just tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I worked in the Phoenix Fire Department for almost 50 years, retired about 5 years ago, and have been out on the road teaching and participating with the fire service. I've been involved in some NFPA committee work. I'm still on the, I was the chairman for 10 years of the 1710 committee, and I'm still a member of that committee. I just termed out in the thing. Still attended most of the major fire service events and enjoying that very much, and enjoy getting to hang out with the fire service in some educational settings where you get to know each other and get to talk about some interesting issues. So staying real busy, probably do an event in some way every week or so. My wife told me the other day that I failed retirement, but it's been fun, and still enjoy being with the fire service and listening and learning and hanging out. So, and we've been doing the program at Columbia Southern now for a couple of years. That's been a great experience. I think that's another place where we've been able to apply some of the experiences that all of us have had as fire chiefs to help maybe younger, upwardly mobile characters in the fire service who are looking forward to those jobs. And they've been a great partner in the educational process, and we've got some scheduled and seem to be scheduling more, so it's kind of catching on, and we're certainly thrilled about that. But still very much a student of the business. Every day I'm fascinated by how much I don't know and how much I learn about what we do, and I don't think you ever know anywhere close to a third of it, much less all of it. So I keep studying and listening and learning and trying to make sense out of it with everybody else. So that's kind of where I went to camp this summer, Billy.
I can tell you, I appreciate your visit to camp, because you being a part of the fire service at this level, even after retirement, still you train so many people and touch so many people's lives and the direction we're heading. And I think we always maintain ourselves as students of this business, and because the business does continue to change, and I know we'll talk some more about that. Chief Rubin, I had a great pleasure working with Chief Rubin. He's been a dear friend of mine, but to work with him for a couple years in Washington, D.C. was truly a rewarding experience for me, and Chief, the things I learned from him was incredible. So Chief Rubin, if you could kind of give us a little background on where you're at and what you're doing and what's going on in your life.
Certainly. Thank you so much, Billy, and thanks to Firehouse.com. Very exciting to be a part of a panel that discusses perhaps the most important part of what we do, and that's the leadership piece. For me, I had a chance, as you mentioned, to be with Washington, D.C. Fire Department for just a bit under 4 years, my hometown. It was very exciting, very active, and had a lot of things going on. currently I find myself in the position of doing some advisory work along with some general consulting, whether it's course development or training or teaching. And that's perhaps just a polite way, Billy, of saying that I'm unemployed. So excited about being a part of this program, excited about the Columbia Southern connection that Chief Brunicini mentioned. I've had a chance to teach in your curriculum on a couple of occasions. And I think there's some really good learning opportunities out there, and not just for the students, as Chief Brunicini mentioned, but also for us as well.
All right. Thanks, Chief. It's great to have you a part of Firehouse.com podcast today. Chief Varner, one of our dear friends from out west, but understand you recently moved to, I spoke to Chief Varner yesterday, it was 115 degrees in Glendale. What in the world?
Well, it's summertime here, and it's June, and that's kind of what that does. And I can't say that I missed that part of the Phoenix area, but it's certainly good to be back in the Phoenix area and living in Goodyear, Arizona. Yes, it was named for the tire company. I got to spend the last just under 7 years in Santa Rosa, California, in Northern California. So I declimatized myself for summer. I'm working on that, and spending 12 years in Carrollton, Texas, as the fire chief there before, and 25 years with Phoenix. And you know, Alan has been one of my mentors over the years, and. My wife said the same thing to me the other day. She said, "You're not really retired, are you?" But I've had the opportunity to stay involved with the NFPA protected clothing and equipment process and electronic safety equipment, which is a committee that I currently chair, and we're responsible for PAS devices and thermal imagers and general electronic safety equipment. So that's one of the areas where I've managed to keep busy and. I've had the opportunity to do some things with a couple of DHS projects that deal with firefighter location and tracking and physiological monitoring, and managing to keep busy with that, and just a wonderful opportunity to be involved in the Brunicini Leadership Institute is the classes that we've been able to have so far, and meet some really, really wonderful students. Some very intelligent folks with good insight, and in those we've had just great opportunities to listen to really diverse opinions and comments. So it's been very good, and I'm having a great time being retired.
All right. Well, congratulations to you again. I know you're most recently retired of the group. Myself. You know, after 20-plus years in the business, I came to work with Columbia Southern University and moved up to the Vice President of Marketing and Outreach. So I'm definitely in a different career direction. But, you know, a long time ago, I always said that I really enjoyed marketing and that if I went back to college and got a degree in marketing somehow once I exited the fire service, I would still be a part of the fire service, and but just not in the fire service. So it's kind of weird how things work out, and here I am with a great group, and I still get to hang out with you guys, so what a treat it is for me. So with that, let's kind of get started in what the subject of our podcast is today and talk about leadership, and we've got several things we're going to talk about, but I think to address some of the most current items that are out there, we see a lot of stories out about how local government, because of the economy and the downturn that has occurred, how we see budgets affected, whether it's reduction in pay, whether it's reduction in benefits, reduction in staffing, and it's about a public perception and how important that is to the fire service. And of course, we're in the 10-year anniversary of September 11th, and you know, a lot of the public sentiment we had immediately following 9/11 has since dissipated to where you have people who are angry at firefighters because of the pensions they draw, because of the benefits they receive. And you see a lot of firefighters, as Chief Brunicini often says, out of balance in their behaviors. So I want to put that on the table and first address it with Chief Brunicini. Some of your thoughts on what's going on in our current public and fire service arenas.
You know, I think for anybody or any group, any organization, Billy, is that I don't think that you define yourself so much when you're on top. In other words, when everybody loves you and you're winning and you're a hero, that all feels good. But a guy told me once, he said, don't let it go higher in your heart. He said, we're crazy if we think that we're going to continue to ride that wave that we had after September 11th. Let me use that specifically. But that if we don't think that once in a while we're going to get scuffed up, we just simply live in a dream world. There is nobody in the public arena that is continually a hero in the process. Once again, I think that we define ourselves how we behave and react and perform and deal with getting beat up rather than when they're having a ticker tape parade for us. These are tough times. There's a lot of people out of work. We're going through the worst recession that most of us have ever lived through. If you kind of stand back from it, when this is going on, the system, the public system, the media, the people who create public opinion, are looking for places to take out their energy. And now what they're doing is they're doing it with cops and firefighters and teachers of all people, the process. I don't think that we ought to hide out. I don't think that's what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is that we're crazy if we don't recognize that this country, probably the whole world right now, if you kind of read about it, is going through some really difficult times. We're getting some of it on us, very simply, of that the fallout from the times that we're going through. I think we need to be careful of what we do. This is a time when we ought to behave in a extraordinary kind of way. I don't think that we ought to ever look frivolous or recreational. I think on every level we ought to ask ourselves, how does what we're doing look to people outside of our service? I think we stay connected in our communities. I think what made us the most popular and trusted service was the way that we delivered service to Mrs. Smith, as we always say. I think we should never give up on that. In other words, if there was ever a time that we ought to pay attention to the way we're relating and connecting to the customers, is right now. So I think it's a time when bosses really need to help the troops understand what's going on, provide the encouragement and support to say, get out there and be visible in a very functional, business-like kind of way. Pay attention to your business. Go do your business and mean business when you do it. And look business-like. Forgive me for using that word so much. And to say, we'll get through all this. And I think that the feeling and the position and the way that we were regarded is probably a lot different if you talk to Mrs. Smith than if you read an editorial in a newspaper. In other words, I don't think that Mrs. Smith is mad at us. I think that the pundits and the people who kind of manage and connect to the current culture, are making observations about things like benefits and hours and pensions and all the things that we really ought to pay attention to somehow managing right now.
Chief, don't you think that, and you kind of hit on something there, that a majority of the public probably doesn't have the anger, but I think it's important for the firefighters and everybody in the fire service to understand is that the public we serve, they're going through some economic downturns themselves. It's obviously, local government goes through it because the public goes through it. And, you know, those people that we're responding to are unemployed or house or maybe two or three notes behind or in foreclosure. They're going through bankruptcy, divorce, whatever that may be associated with the economy. And we're responsible for responding to them. So I agree. We're kind of walking on eggshells of how we pitch our message, I guess, of protecting our pay, protecting our hours, protecting our benefits, and we're not going to get much sympathy from the public right now, and I think we need to be aware of that. Chief Rubin, what are your thoughts?
Well, I think it's a question of the community setting their priorities like everything else. I appreciate all the negative comments being made nationwide by newspapers and media outlets, and I know sometime in the immediate next couple of days, one of the states will be taking voting on massively changing a public pension system for an entire state in a very negative way. But I think when the dust settles, if we're continuing to provide that service, if the community is aware of what our capabilities are, if we stick to the basics, and I know Chief Renacini said this in probably a little bit more eloquent way, I think we'll come out the other end just fine. I know in the District of Columbia, in the worst of times, we were able to grow the department and somewhat keep up with the police. And during these really difficult times, the police saw 2 and 3 and 4% budgetary increases. Ours weren't quite as large as that, but we were able to expand during that time. So I wouldn't throw the baby out with the bathwater. I think it's time to roll up our sleeves. I think the departments that haven't done a good job with community relations, and I don't mean that in a cheesy spin way, but in a way that really is significant and interacting with the customers and providing services that perhaps we've never provided before. I know, again, I'm going to refer to the Washington, D.C. experience when we simply began taking blood pressures and conducting blood sugar screening at metro stops in the morning. It certainly meant that the firefighters were going to have to give a little bit more, but the feedback was absolutely awesome. And in fact, a couple of the media outlets made an appearance and went through the process of getting their items screened as well, and they turned it into a nice story. So I would say get out there, work hard, probably work harder than we ever had. And I would also, the last comment I would make, Billy, is watch the dumb mistakes of the firefighters that decide to cook naked or hiring firefighters that might be involved in the next major drug deal. None of that's going to help our cause.
You know, it could be, Billy, as simple as if, and I heard a guy say this the other day, he says, if you look at the cars that are going by in front of a fire station, when 10 cars go by, one of the guys in those cars doesn't have a job. If you have a park bench out front of your fire station, and you're sitting there lounging in that park bench, this is a practical example of saying, be careful what you're doing looks to others. Just take the damn park bench and put it behind the fire station. I don't think that firefighters ought to be prisoners in fire stations. But if we look like we're sitting in front of a fire station on a park bench like it's another day at the beach, I know how I would feel if I looked at that and I didn't have a job. I don't think I'd have a very positive reaction to it. So I think there's a lot of simple things. I think what Chief Rubin said is there's a hell of a big difference between sitting on a park bench and taking people's blood pressures. If there was ever a time we need to go down to the metro station and take their blood pressure, it's right now.
Exactly. Chief Farner, was you going to chime in on this one?
Yes, absolutely, Billy. And, you know, coming from a part of the country that certainly saw some tremendous economic downturn very, very recently in Northern California, in fact, the entire state of California, some of the things that we saw going on there, and I'll speak very proudly of the labor group in Santa Rosa, California, is they were under a contract that had some guaranteed raises in it. And they went through a negotiations process, reopened that contract with the full knowledge that there was no way in these times they could accept those raises. One of those raises was an 8% raise. You can't do that in this kind of economic times. And they went through a very difficult process. And I remember one city councilman saying, well, we need you guys just to go ahead and take the raise because then we can blame all this on you. Well, they're smart enough not to fall for that. And really, if you look around the country at the departments and the labor groups that have participated with the communities in reducing the budgets where necessary, in trying to make intelligent decisions as to what really can be reduced and how you can continue to deliver high-quality service to the citizens of the community, that's been perceived by the citizens in very positive manners. Alan talked about it very eloquently, simply taking care of business. If there's ever been a time that we need to be taking care of business, it's certainly right now. I think you can't pass up. Be nice. Be nice to people. Treat people the way that you would want members of your family treated. And I think those are really keys to interacting with the public. And when they ask those difficult questions about pensions and about salaries, just simply tell the truth. Tell them what it is. Tell them what you know about it. But don't try the we deserve it routine. So I think there's some opportunities there. Certainly the interaction with the public looking for opportunities to provide service, just as Chief Rubin described, going out to the metro stop, being involved with the community are keys to getting through tough times.
You know, Chief Brunicini continuously talks about Mrs. Smith and customers, and I've been a part of those discussions and our presentations together. And I really kind of got the message. You know, you always say that you get it, the customers are truly at heart, but when you're the customer and you feel like you're forsaken a little bit, that message that Chief Brunicini's been talking about for years really, really plays on you. In fact, it just happened to me a couple weeks ago, and I don't want to throw any airlines under the bus, but it's an airline that's merging with another one, and I told them that the discussion about some of the perks that an elite member or a business class member, whatever you want to call it, medallion level, whatever airlines you could use, is going away because of the merger. And the response I got back from the flight attendant was, yeah, but it's better for us. And I said, excuse me? And they said, well, yes, it's better for us. And I said, well, what do you mean? And they talked about the pay raise they were going to get. They talked about the benefits they were going to get. They talked about the 401 matches they were going to get. And I was sitting there kind of scratching my head thinking, well, those airlines continue to fly because of your loyal customers who continue to fly you. And I asked the question, well, what about us as your customers? And I just got a blank stare back from them. And I was really kind of disappointed in that because, you know, it was a celebratory moment that I really got it, Chief Brunicini, for all the things that you've been talking about for years, and please don't take it wrong, I haven't got it, but as the customer, I got it from the other end, and I was like, wow, the connection is made. So, and so for the fire service to go out and kind of ask those questions, what about us, to the public right now, you got to think about the customers and what they're going through to kind of sum up this discussion we've had already.
You know, there's probably some systems that historically, and I'm going to use the term that you mentioned, Billy, that are so out of balance that if the fire chief suggests, or somebody in the system, whoever it was, suggested, let's go to the metro station in the morning and take people's blood pressures, they would say, we want to go back to the bargaining table. In other words, we want to open negotiations because that's a change in our working conditions. And you're thinking, huh? Yeah, and again, believe me, I am an absolutely pro-labor character. I've been in the union my whole entire life. I hope I never did anything that distorted the contract that we had, and I worked in a contract in my whole career. But when that's almost the same as what you said about the flight attendant saying it's better for us. Because one of the things that, let me say this, and this isn't a very popular thing to say, some of the publicity that we're starting to get here, negative publicity, the bottom line is that it reflects, it can in some cases reflect a selfishness on our part. And clearly, I hope that we have the best benefits that our members can get. I certainly enjoyed those benefits all the time I was in the service. And I hope those benefits never go away. But I think that they have to have a realistic relationship to the outside world, is all I'm saying in the process. And when we appear as though we have somehow a distorted relationship to the outside world, that's when we're in trouble, because it simply won't stand any kind of public scrutiny in the process.
I think you summed it up very well, because my response back to that flight attendant was, I really hope you get all the benefits you deserve. I hope you do get those raises, but, you know, what about us, the customer, and, you know, still that blank stare. So it really sums up our discussion. We're going to go into a break and come back to you. Again, thank you for joining us on Firehouse.com podcast. We'll be back to you in just a few moments with more leadership topics.
Did you know that according to NFPA 1021 Fire Officer 1, the first on-scene company officer is required to develop an initial action plan based on size-up information and then implement that preliminary action plan by assigning resources? That is a national consensus standard for the first on-scene, first-level fire officer. My simple yet powerful four-block strategic process will ensure that you nail your first officer on scene strategic responsibility every time, even at 3 in the morning. As a bonus, you will take home some of my radio communication solutions and discover how to quickly achieve and maintain tactical accountability. Learn more about Firehouse Expo by visiting firehouseexpo.com, and I look forward to meeting you at Expo in Baltimore. Take care.
Welcome back to Firehouse.com podcast. I'm your host, Billy D. Hayes, with Columbia Southern University. With us today is Chief Alan Bernasini, Chief Dennis L. Rubin, and Chief Bruce Varner. We've spent the first part of our show talking about leadership and some of the things that are occurring in our current industry, and it plays right into the four of us are the panel speakers for the Chief Bernasini Leadership Retreat that will be conducted at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore, Maryland this coming July. It'll be July 18th through the 20th. Will be held at the Hilton. The Baltimore Hilton in Baltimore, Maryland. So we look forward to having folks come on board and be a part of that. For registration information, you can go to www.columbiasouthern.edu/fire-leadership. Again, columbiasouthern.edu/fire-leadership. Tells you all the information about the Fire Rescue Leadership Retreat. Registration information will direct you straight to the Firehouse Expo registration website. And for those of you who want to know a quick little bit about it, of course, we all understand how important CEUs are to the fire service with your chief fire officer designation, your chief medical officer designation, whether it's your NREMT, emergency manager, whatever the case may be. We offer 2 CEUs to attend the retreat, as well as, if you want to become a student with Columbia Southern University, 3 course credits. The Chief Bernasini Leadership Retreat is a gateway into Directive Study Course 3500. So what we want to do is have students who attend the retreat continue their education, which was Chief Bernasini's vision of putting this retreat together, to have them become a part of higher education learning. With addition to that, once you attend, Chief Bernasini and his sons Nick and John have been working very hard on implementing Blue Card certification around the country, which addresses Type 4, Type 5 incidents that we respond to. So as we go through all this, you also receive a subscription to the Blue Card, the first course, which is a 50 to 60 hour online course, which ties into what Columbia Southern is all about, online learning. So really, you can walk away from the retreat not only with 2 CEUs, but essentially with 6 course credits as a student of Columbia Southern University. Again, this is all occurring at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore, Maryland, July 18th through the 20th. So we'll talk briefly on that because Chief Rubin just launched a series with Firehouse Magazine on chief traits, and the first one just came out in this edition. He addressed the first 4, and it'll be a 3-part series that'll go through July as well as into August. So I will ask Chief Rubin to tell us a little bit about the chief traits and how it ties into what we're trying to accomplish with higher education in the fire service.
Thanks, Billy. The little bit of background in history, 2 of my mentors, Peter Matthews from Firehouse.com and Harvey Eisner from Firehouse, both grabbed me at a recent conference and they said, hey, put together the top 10 things that you think have been important for you to become a fire chief and to be successful at being a chief. And I tried my hardest, but I came up actually with a dozen different traits, a couple of the ones off the top of my head. I think the first one is to be nosy, and I know that sounds like perhaps a goofy leadership trait, but for me, as I entered into a couple of organizations, I found some very serious things that were wrong. Not that the people wanted to do things incorrectly, but it was more of an omission instead of commission. For instance, aerial ladders weren't being tested or annual hose tests being properly conducted, which ultimately would lead up to big, potentially, incident failures and other related problems. And also being nosy in general about how the organization operates. being a good communicator was one of the next ones, and I think everybody understands how critically important having good communication skills are. I know that a lot of folks think about ideal communications under ideal conditions, and I usually ask folks in that discussion, are they married? And then secondly, do they have any teenage kids? And in both cases, usually it drives home the point. Sometimes it's tough to get points across and to send a full and complete idea. I know one of the pieces ended with the discussion about being prepared, and you said it so well, Billy, having an opportunity to go to a three-day experience with some of the greatest fire chiefs in the country, obviously Chief Brunicini, and I could go on for hours, but getting a chance to work close with Chief Varner and looking at some of the incidents that he's been directly involved in, and certainly beyond just emergency events, dealing with personnel issues, budgetary problems, perception problems like we've been talking about in this podcast as an example. It's been great to hear Bruce's insight, and as always, Chief Brunicini pulls a rabbit out of his hat in that he's had some guest instructors come along the way. Otto Huber has been just excellent, and you never know when he's going to pop in, or a host of about a dozen other great friends of Bruno. I hope, Big Chief, that I said that okay and didn't get too far out of line, but that's some of my thoughts, Billy.
And talking about yes, because we are going to be, the next retreat will be in Baltimore, we'll have a guest with us, and that'll be Chief Jim Clack from Baltimore City Fire Department. So we're looking forward to having Chief Clack and some of his department to attend. And we know the relationship that Baltimore City and Philadelphia and D.C. Fire we had together. So it'll be good to have that mix of large department and small department interaction going on there. So thanks.
He is outstanding. The only problem I have with Chief Clack is the Baltimore Orioles. And you know, I'm just teasing. But when he talks about some of the experiences that he's been up against, wow, absolutely an amazing person, and that's just a great example. You never know how Chief Brunicini is going to continue to surprise us on this leadership journey.
Absolutely. No doubt in my mind. And I wanted to follow up something from the first part of our show, because it goes into how we talk about functional behaviors that Chief Brunicini is going to lead us in our next discussion. But as I talked about the flight attendant that was telling me or was talking to another flight attendant about how important it is, of how great it was going to be for them, the employees, they said it loud enough where you could hear it, and it made the other flight attendant uncomfortable, and certainly if you want to boast about that, and I certainly agree they should get everything they should, just like the fire service we should, you just have to be careful of how you present that in front of the customers, in which I've seen that happen time and time again as the fire service. We demand what's better for us, but not necessarily what's better for the customers. And that, again, becomes out of functional boss behaviors, which we always talk about in the leadership retreat. So, Chief Brunicini, I'll turn it back over to you to kind of address some of the functional behaviors that we need to address in the fire service.
Let me continue with the great example that you gave with the flight attendant, Billy. Is that organization really was a little bit derelict in not conditioning that employee, that flight attendant, in other words, that business associate, to represent to you, the customer, that organization in a positive kind of way. And this is all we mean when we talk about functional behavior routines. In other words, it would have been interesting, and let me say this, and then I'll kind of hook it up. Because if somebody had given them a chance to do some sets and reps in representing the merger that organization was going through in a positive way for the customers, in other words, to say, maybe use the example that you did in that training process to say you left an awful taste in the mouth of a customer flying on one of your airplanes because you reacted in an absolutely self-centered kind of way. Now, it would have been interesting if that same person had represented to you the benefits as a flyer, as on the business end of sitting back in seat 26B, and said, this is how this merger is going to help you. And Chief Rubin said it before, and I don't know how else to say this, just shut up about your benefits. In other words, if she hadn't said that to you, we wouldn't be having this conversation right now.
Exactly.
Now, you mentioned the blue card thing. It's interesting, in the blue card thing, at the end of the 60-hour training program, there's a 3-day simulation certification class. And for 3 days, we engage in teaching and practicing and refining and applying functional behavior routines to managing type 5 and type 4 incidents. I think that we can take that experience and apply it any place in our business. In other words, if we want to learn about doing leadership in an effective kind of way, figure out for us, and we're trying to do this in the course that we teach for Columbia Southern that we're going to teach in Baltimore, is simply you're going to get a chance to practice those behavior routines in a place where you can be coached, where there's a discussion, where you have colleagues. It's a safe place. If you make a mistake, it isn't going to hurt anything. It just becomes a part of the discussion. In other words, this is the great thing about being able to practice routines before you actually have to go out when the chips are flying, and simply do that where now it's showtime. And this is what we're doing in the leadership retreat, is we're trying to help people understand and get ready for in practice what they're going to have to do as a boss when it's showtime. But I think that that's a terrific example that you give, and just simply a lot of lessons in it. When that person opened their mouth, he did not represent that organization very well.
And not at all. And as a customer, you know, I was sitting in 1C, so you kind of somewhat see that as you move close to the airplane, maybe you should watch what you say. But there's no distinct difference in 1C or 26C, as you said. But yet, you know, maybe that's just a one employee. Of course, have I flown that airline since? Absolutely, because I'm loyal to that airline. Just if I were as a customer citizen here in Orange Beach Fire Department, one bad experience doesn't mean I'm not going to call 911 again. That's the necessity of it. Maybe you have that one employee that gets out of balance, as we talk about, in which the same exact thing happens in the fire service when you have that one employee who may shoot a bird at one of our citizens, or drive their fire truck tailgating somebody, or anything else that we could talk about. As Chief Rubin earlier mentioned about drugs or whatever else, you may have one member that gets out of balance, but that one member affects the entire image of the fire service.
What did the people in D.C. when they walked away from the metro station when a bunch of firefighters took their blood pressure say? They wasn't complicated. They said, boy, that was really nice.
Absolutely, I mean, especially for the folks.
Yeah, that ain't Chinese algebra. Now, you said something, Billy, that's interesting. You were sitting in seat 1C. Everybody that's sitting in the first four rows of that airplane are frequent flyers.
Yes, sir.
If you were going to say something stupid, and you shouldn't say it anywhere, so let me say that before I utter what I'm going to say. But if you're going to, you know, the people in the front of the airplane understand flying on an airplane. There's people in the back in row 26 that probably, that's their first flight. Hell, they're so scared you could say anything to them. But if you think about it, the people in the front of that airplane are the people who are road warriors. They have road rash. I got 3 million miles on the airline that I fly on mostly. I understand that airline pretty completely, just like everybody on this call does. But it's interesting for a guy to say, not to belabor it, but it's interesting for that person to say that to the people in the front of the airplane.
That's
they're the kind of guys that have talk show. They're talk show hosts.
Yeah. And that's why I think I was kind of caught off guard. Probably the concept of customer service that you've been driving into the fire service for years was so prevalent to me at that moment that I just like, wow, on the customer end, I get it. As the customer service provider, I've always understood it. But I think that was one of the first times it really just clearly rang the bell. We've all gone to restaurants and had bad service, but you know, this was one of the first times that I've ever encountered, and I've always had excellent customer service with this airline, so let me say that. And this was just that one person that was completely out of balance. So, but did it affect the image? You know, I always have in the back of my mind now, do they all feel that way? Which is kind of similar to Mrs. Smith when she calls 911 and you get the at 3 o'clock in the morning, maybe her very first time ever calling 911, is a critical moment for her, her first encounter with us, and she gets the grumpy firefighter that says they don't get paid enough money to get out of bed at 3 o'clock in the morning and respond to her sick stomach. What's her image of customer service in the fire service going to be from that point forward?
See, and I don't think it ought to hurt our feelings when she says, you know, you only work 8 days a month. You drive a Ford F-250 pickup and you got 6 weeks of vacation and a 20-year pension. And now you're pissed off because I called you at 3 o'clock in the morning? You're an ungrateful asshole. See, that would hurt our feelings, wouldn't it? In other words, we'd go back to the fire station and we'd pout for a week. You know what that person said to us? I guess this is what we're talking about, is we shouldn't live in a dream world, is that we've got to integrate ourselves, our organization, the profession that we're in, into the real world that's out there. And again, I'm happy we only work 8 days a month, and I don't think we ought to make ourselves a secret society, but sometimes what we really ought to do, and let me just say this, it sounds kind of funny, is just simply shut up about it. The only reason she's mad at us about it is because she probably heard somebody in the fire service say something that was just eminently stupid, and she's repeating it.
Helen, I'm reminded of a phone call, and you've told this story. I know that it's one that's been around a little while, but a guy called the assistant chief, and he wanted to talk about the call where firefighters had responded. His 3-year-old fell off the swing, and you know what they do when they fall off the swing? They break their wrist. They break their arm, and it's easily fixed. You take him to the doctor. It's really taken care of very well. However, in this instance, the firefighter chose to engage the mom and wanted to know why she couldn't have just driven the kid to the hospital. The guy asked the question, is, I'd just like to know, what is it that firefighter was doing that was so damned important that he felt the need to vilify my wife for calling 911? And there's just no possible explanation. Who was the most important customer? And our old friend Jim Page used to say it very well. The most important customer in a call like that was mom. Because the kid was going to be fine. It was a closed fracture. It's an easy fix. You comfort them. You stabilize it. You get them to a hospital. But mom is absolutely bazoo because her baby has been hurt. Now, another old friend of ours, as I recall, he wrote an open letter following an incident like that in which the firefighter wasn't identified. And he said, he started the letter, is a note to a complete idiot. And he described the situation and it described the situation. People were calling his office. They said, who is it, Chief? We're going to kill him. We're going to take him out and explain customer service to him. Firefighters were calling the office. And he said,
Bruce,
I don't know who it is.
Bruce, you were a fire chief for a long time. What would you do if one of your firefighters broke his arm? What would you do? You'd call ALS, you'd call transport, you'd have a battalion chief run on it, you'd call the guy's family, wouldn't you?
All of those things, Alan, and we have done those repeatedly. And when you have someone that is, as Billy just described with the airline story, just out of balance, it hurts the entire fire service. There was nothing you could possibly say that I could possibly say to this guy that called and said, what was he doing that was so important that he had to vilify my wife when she was concerned about our child?
Yeah. No, yeah.
Absolutely nothing, sir. Absolutely nothing.
To put it in perspective, the reason that we're having this discussion is because that's so unusual. The Smith family loves us because of the way we take care of little Billy when he breaks his arm.
Absolutely.
In other words, This happens, what, one in a thousand times, some guy. But that's what gets in that's the news, is the one in a thousand times. Nobody can control that but us. No, this is a problem that the only place that we can solve this problem, like most leadership problems, is on the inside of the organization. The Daughters of the American Revolution aren't going to come in and deal with that dumb shit firefighter that said that to Mrs. Smith. In other words, we're going to have to deal with Farquhar, the firefighter whose biorhythms are screwed up. And again, I don't think we ought to kill the guy. What we ought to say is, think about what you just said to that woman. And if you're having a bad day, just go out and sit on the fire truck and keep your damn mouth shut. Forgive me for keep saying that.
Amen. And yeah. I think in these economic times, those oopses, and then they happen. We have people that have bad days. We have people that do dumb things. And I think very, very rare do we have anyone who does something like that just purposeful. They go out to intentionally hurt someone's feelings. That is so incredibly rare. But in these economic times, it's not only big local news, it becomes big national news. Here's another example of how your public employees are treating the public. Actually, they should say overpaid public employees are treating the public. So we're seeing that where something that 10 years ago would have been local news now becomes huge national news, and certainly in the social media frenzy that we have today, it's on Twitter, it's on Facebook, it's on YouTube instantly. So it's really incumbent to deal with those situations and train people to deal with the situations, as you said, reps and sets on basic customer service.
Yeah.
Well, I think what we've covered so far, because I know we're close to wrapping up, we'll have some closing thoughts from everybody, is we've had some selling points on what we as the fire service expect and how we should be expected to perform as members. And I go back to something that Chief Rubin talks about in many of his presentations, is somebody's always watching, and maybe he'll tell us just a brief story about that. But somebody's always watching. As me as a customer, somebody's always listening, so you never know what you may say in the fire service and where you say it in public, who may overhear you saying something, because I think as fire chiefs, we've all dealt with that. And then our behavior and our interaction with our customers now is so important. It's probably more important now than ever, simply because from a perception point, not that our service delivery should be any different in any time of day, but I think the perception that we relay to the public is probably more critically important in these economic times than ever before. So with that, I'll go ahead.
Let me jump back in here just one more real quick time. Is with the Leadership Institute, with the classes we've done, when we're doing the case studies, it's incredible to listen to the varied solutions that come from the students with the varied backgrounds. And I think that's just another tie into this program and what a great opportunity it is to get all those different experiences thrown into the solutions. And I've certainly walked away from those saying, wow, that's not something that I would have thought of. You know, if there was a different solution, I would have dealt with it differently. But we get some great input from the participants in the program.
And I think what we've delivered in this podcast is just a 45 to 50-minute sample of what 2.5 days at the leadership retreat is about. A lot of candid conversation and discussion, addressing issues, along with several case studies that we go through that we all have, can associate ourselves with, and we all have different results or expectations of. So you're right, Chief Varner. We learn so much from the students in this case, and we take that information and continue to expand the leadership retreat. So Chief Rubin, I'll, any final thoughts?
Thanks again for the opportunity. Let me also thank firehouse.com. They do an incredible job, and if there's any way that I can help the listeners, they have dozens of ways of getting a hold of me. So don't hesitate. We'll provide whatever information that we can. We hope to see you in Baltimore.
Chief Varner, any closing thoughts?
I think just one thing that we probably missed in talking about how to sign up for the retreat, you can also do that at the Firehouse website. So there's just one more and thank the fabulous host that Firehouse always is for us and Firehouse.com for allowing us this opportunity to have this discussion this morning.
Absolutely. Just as a reminder, you can register at FirehouseExpo.com, and the Chief Brunicini banner is on that front website. You can click on that. It will take you to registration. Or, again, you can go through columbiasouthern.edu and /fire/leadership, and that will get you to the same Firehouse Expo registration site. So, Chief Arner, thanks for clearing that up for us. Chief Brunicini, closing thoughts from you, sir.
Well, I think we've talked about some really interesting stuff. Thank everybody for being with us. Hope that they can join us at one of our leadership conferences. It's as Chief Marner says, so we're all students of this stuff, so we can hang out together. And it seems like whenever we do that for a couple of days, you certainly go away from that learning a lot of stuff. So it's been great being with you. I'll join what Chief Rubin said. If I can help anybody, just holler. My name's in the book here in Phoenix. Just give me a call. I'd love to visit with you, and I'll look forward to seeing you guys down the line.
And to close out, I appreciate everybody who's listening to this podcast and your support. Hopefully you've taken something away from this. And if any of us can ever be a part of anything in your career, please don't hesitate to contact us again. Thank you for the partnership that we have with Cygnus, Firehouse Magazine, and Firehouse.com. Peter Matthews, we appreciate his support in putting this podcast together for us. He's the producer, and he's always going to do a wonderful job as always. So again, this is Billy D. Hayes, your host. Thanks for joining us on Firehouse.com podcast.
Hey there, it's Steve Przybrowski, Battalion Chief and Careers Columnist at Firehouse.com. I look forward to seeing you at Firehouse Expo in Baltimore, where I'll be conducting a classroom session on succession planning. With the massive number of retirements and job transitions that are taking place today across the country, the question exists, does your fire department have a plan for the next person to wear the next white helmet or the next red helmet? Join me in July to learn about the important steps to make sure that the knowledge is not lost when your chief officers, or even company officers hang up their helmet and retire for good. Learn about Firehouse Expo at FirehouseExpo.com, and I'll look forward to seeing you in July.
If you have a comment on this program, drop us a line at radio@firehouse.com. Thanks for listening, and stay tuned to firehouse.com for more broadcasts like these. Or visit our website at www.firehouse.com/radio.